Good evening, everyone. I'm Chris Nemechek. I'm the director for the Center for the Liberal Arts, and I want to welcome you to our final Call 300 visitor event of the fall semester. Tonight's visitor is Dr. Nancy Fry, and Professor Kay Jenkins from Sociology will introduce her shortly. Without further ado, Kay, would you like to come up?
I'm Kathleen Jenkins. I'm a professor in the Sociology Department. I'm also director of the Pilgrimage Institute here at William & Mary, and I'm so excited to introduce and welcome Nancy Fry to campus for this talk for this year's 300 Call 300 theme, Human Movement and Migration. Nancy has lived in Galicia in Spain for over 20 years and has been deeply involved in the life of the Camino de Santiago and walking travel for transformation across Spain. Together with her husband, Jose, Nancy founded On Foot in Spain, Walking and Hiking Adventures in 1999, which continues strong today and is committed to slow travel and moving through culture in ways that promote learning and reflection. She received her degree in anthropology from the University of California at Berkeley, and in 1998 wrote an important book, Pilgrim Stories, On and Off the Road to Santiago. Pilgrim Stories brings the Camino to life by addressing pilgrims' motivations and discoveries, and providing also insights into the resurgence and the popularity of the Camino de Santiago. This book also, in rich detail, outlines the cultural landscape of the Camino before digital devices became popular. Much of Nancy's recent work addresses pilgrims in a digital age. She's developed a website, Walking to Presence, that is dedicated to sharing her findings and insights on pilgrimage in the digital age, and to help travelers reflectively engage with their journeys. Nancy is a pilgrim, a pilgrim's guide, an ethnographer, who has provided a deep understanding of the Camino de Santiago to a wide audience. And we're lucky to have her with us this afternoon to talk with us about the life of this pilgrimage, this sacred destination in Northwest Spain.
Thank you, Kay, and thank you to William and Mary for inviting me here today. It is a pleasure. You have such a beautiful campus. I have so much enjoyed these last week that I've been here walking around. Some of you may have seen me walking around in your woods and around the campus and enjoying your beautiful, beautiful setting. It's such a beautiful place, and it is a pleasure for me to be here. And there is also another special guest in this audience, and it's quite hard for me to believe that he is here, but a very important person in my academic career at UC Berkeley is the world-renowned anthropologist Nelson Grayburn, who has studied tourism, ethnic arts, multiculturalism, circumpolar peoples, and more recently China and Japan, and he came all the way from California to come to see this talk tonight. So, Nelson, thank you very much. A lot of what I'm talking about is an ode to the face-to-face, the human connections that we make with one another. And that act of his, of coming here, is an example of how important it is that we engage with one another in that way. So sitting there, you might wonder, what possible relevancy could a pilgrimage in Spain have to do with me? And why am I here other than to fulfill some course requirement? But what I'm going to talk about relates directly to the lived experience of every single person in this room, even if you never set foot in Spain. Because what happens on the Camino de Santiago is simply a reflection of what happens in our daily lives. My presentation explores the impacts that digital media technologies have on the Camino pilgrimage and by extension, our own lives, whether we realize it or not. Now, this piece of Camino graffiti, life is a Camino, which is the Spanish word for path, road, way, means that life is a journey. And that really sums up my academic and professional experience. Maybe it sounds trite, but it's true. Life is a journey that we are all on. It's a movement from the known to the unknown, both inner and outer movement. It's about taking risks, challenging ourselves, and going through real and metaphorical doorways. If you never open them, you won't know what's on the other side. And if you're looking down, you might not even see that they are there. That's what I do. I take people on journeys, and today I hope to take you on one with me. Today, my life's journey has brought me here with you. First, I want to share with you a small part of my story when I was your age, because people always ask me, how did you get to the Camino? This is me. You can see, sitting there in the middle in my college dorm room when I'm your age. I think I was 18, 19, my freshman year, sitting there in that space. I loved college and learning. I've always loved learning. And one good idea I had before I went to college was I wanted to study what I loved, what I thought was interesting, not what I thought would get a job. And that's how I found my way to anthropology. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are circles trying to fit themselves into square pegs, thinking about that job later on. Now, at school, I did everything right. I worked very hard, and I got rewarded for my efforts. Look at all those things I managed to do. I graduated summa cum laude from my university. I joined a sorority and was named Greek Woman of the Year my senior year. I studied Russian. I sang in a choir. I worked part-time several semesters. I was a student health advocate. I got my undergraduate honors thesis published by a major anthropological publication. I had a pretty good social life, and I kept fit. After college, I became a national representative of my sorority, got accepted into UC Berkeley's PhD program, and I even married my high school boyfriend. My life was do, nonstop. It was also exhausting. You know, I didn't really question the way it was. That was what society told me was the path to success, and I listened. By the way, I did have really terrible headaches, insomnia, and a feeling of incompetence most of the time. The outside looked okay, but inside I felt like a mess. And I didn't even have social media to complicate it. I really don't know how you guys do it. This is what I felt like on the inside. Let me see if I can get my little thing here. I felt, do you know what this is? Do you guys have a trail? Do you know what a habit trail is? Is there any cultural reference anymore to a habit trail? All right. Well, this was really popular, to have this little device where you put a hamster in and you have it in your room and it runs around and it does this. And I found this video clip and I loved what this girl, her commentary, she talked about 5 minutes about her hamster in her habit trail. And listen to what she says.
She's kind of getting it on that wheel. So I don't know what she plans to accomplish with that, running that fast, but hey. She's kind of getting it on that wheel. So I don't know what she plans to accomplish with that, running that fast, but she's kind of
That was a metaphor of my life. Do you ever feel like that? What was that? Anyway. I like audience participation, so you have something to say, that's fine. The girl in the video says, what's she planning to accomplish running so fast? So life prepared me to do, you know, I showed you all that stuff I did, but not to be. Not about nourishing my inner world. I just kept running towards some faraway, unknown goal. Towards what? Happiness? Success? Society tells you the more you do, the more successful you are, the more you have, the more stuff you have, the better car, the more money, the better person you are. In grad school at UC Berkeley, I was in Spain looking for my dissertation project. and I happened to stumble across the Camino de Santiago in the summer of 1992. The next summer, for my dissertation research in 1993, it was essential for me to walk the Camino. For me, this was a dream come true. The idea combined all my loves. The idea that I would walk across Spain 500 miles for my PhD was pretty amazing. And of course, my plan was to do participant observation, which is what anthropologists do, which means that I would be observing others, but I was not going to go on a pilgrimage myself. I had no intention of going on a pilgrimage. Besides, my life was perfect, wasn't it? I didn't want to change it, except maybe those headaches, that insomnia, and that kind of vague sense that something wasn't quite right, that empty feeling, something missing. Then I found myself on the Camino. This is what it gave me mentally, what I needed but I didn't know, an enormous mental slowdown in nature, calm, peace, no distractions, no agenda, inner freedom. To make a long story short, it turned my life upside down. With an uncluttered mind, I could see my life, be in the moment, how I was lying to myself, what I really wanted, and I was shocked. You know, it was devastating but necessary. I had to leave mentally and physically to truly see my life and open my eyes. Upon return, it gave me strength to make changes that got me off that habit trail of life. Some of those changes really upset people in my immediate circle, but living dishonestly was no longer possible. It was hard, but necessary. Three of the changes that I made, there was various, is one of them was I got rid of my watch, which would be kind of an equivalent today of getting rid of maybe some kind of tech usage. I loved the out-of-sync time quality, and I have several beautiful watches, and I just did not want to have that chain around my arm anymore. I also ended up rupturing and ending that relationship with my high school sweetheart. And I also planted the seed that maybe I didn't want to have a traditional academic career. So after the Camino, my life evolved in ways I never imagined they would when I was your age. When I returned the next year to actually do my dissertation research in 1994, more surprises awaited me on the Camino. New doors opened. One led to love. And I crossed that threshold, and we forged a life and career together in Spain. If you had told that girl in that dorm room, in that photo, that her life would entail meeting a foreigner and living in another country, I never would have believed it. At heart, I'm a curious, hardworking homebody, not a rebel. It's really good for you and healthy to have your ideas challenged, preconceived notions destroyed, and to let your carefully constructed ideas about yourself and world given a good shake-up from time to time. You might discover that certain fictions don't serve you very well. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't like an epiphany or a nirvana moment and happily ever after. Life is full of ups and downs and struggles, and that's why it's a journey. And that's how we grow. By the way, that person sitting there next to me in the middle is not here, but he is here represented in everything that you will see. The Cole 300 theme this fall is human movement and migration. And our journey through life from birth to death is the most basic form of human movement. Many factors influence this passage: where we are born, our genetic makeup, who we are born to, and the cultural, religious, political, racial, and economic systems in which we live. One thing anthropologists do is try to make sense of how different peoples have, over the ages, explained and understood this journey from birth to death, and answer the big questions that have plagued human consciousness since time immemorial. Who are we? Why are we here? And where are we going? Pilgrimage is a type of human movement I studied and can be very broadly defined as a physical and mental journey to a sacred place. Pilgrimage is often loosely used as a metaphor for life to make sense of that passage from birth to death. In the Christian tradition, life is a line. We progress along towards future everlasting spiritual rewards. The sacred destination that has been the focus of my research and professional work for the last 27 years is the tomb of St. James the Apostle, located in Santiago de Compostela, Spain. The network of trails that leads to this tomb is collectively called the Caminos de Santiago, or the Ways of St. James in English. These trails developed slowly over 1,000 years, and Christian religious pilgrims journeyed to Compostela within their religious worldviews of sin and its remittance through penance, sacrifice, and the hope for everlasting salvation. As European thought evolved in the 16th and 17th centuries, pilgrimage to Santiago progressively went out of fashion. The Camino then experienced a spectacular and surprising revival in the mid to late 20th century. This is where I came into the picture when I began to research this new revival in the 1990s. People began to walk in the 20th century not out of religious conviction and hope for a better eternal future, though there are many who did and still do, but to take stock and make sense of their own lives in the here and the now, with few expectations, if any, for otherworldly salvation. It represents a major shift in thinking and action. Pilgrims focused more on the physical and the inner journey and what could be learned along the way in this world than the goal and the afterlife. Pilgrimage along the Camino de Santiago in the 20th century became largely a rejection of the alienating aspects of our increasingly fast-paced modern life. Materialism, speed, and generalized feelings of disconnection from self, nature, society, and meaningful rituals that bind communities. It became a journey of self-discovery and reconnection by going back to the roots of human experience. The formula is simple. Take a long walk in nature with a great infrastructure to do so, follow a culturally meaningful historical route, surrounded by a supportive community and separating oneself from the known and familiar, feel intensely along the way, confront adversity, reduce your mental and physical weights, and you will find peace, diversion, community, and perhaps even meaning and purpose. By having and needing less, pilgrims found inner rewards that often transcended their material lives. Clarity, alive, connected, energized, empowered, and fulfilled are often words used by pilgrims to describe what the Camino gives them in contrast to typically busy, stressful, anxiety-provoking daily lives. The revival is a remarkably healthy social response to existential angst and has generated a great deal of individual and collective good over the last 50 years. In essence, in the late 20th century, Europe decided to go on a long walk to its past and set off what would become the hugely successful international journey that it is today. Evidently, many people all over the world feel similar needs because the Camino is now an international bucket list destination. This, by the way, are the statistics of the pilgrims' growth, and there is no end in sight. I mean, it's quite remarkable. The 21st century Camino is filled with international travelers with often little or no connection to the cultural, religious, and/or historical stories that produced and moved the Camino in medieval Europe. There is no end in sight to its growth and popularity. People in 2019 come to experience it. They feel called to do the Camino. Others want a physical challenge, an adventure, or to slow down mentally and physically. Today, people come with a vast range of motivations and expectations that may have little to do with a search for inner meaning, but they are drawn here nonetheless. Now, imagine yourself in that place. What does that conjure for you? Walking is very healthy for the body and mind. Nature is also soothing and calming. Belonging and camaraderie, the simple pleasures, sticking your feet in water after a hot day's walk. The arrows lead you, give you direction and clarity to your goal. These are spaces of mental peace and tranquility. Psychology and neuroscience tell us that sustained exposure to nature is mentally restorative, where our minds can wander in patterns, like clouds, wind in the wheat, fluttering of the leaves, without fatigue, and yet exercises and stimulates on deep levels. You know, your campus is stunning. It's like you're in this umbrella of nature that is so potentially healing, and you have this incredible tool just outside your doorways between your classes to connect with that restorative power of this. And I'm doing a walk tomorrow about that. So if you do want to come at 9:30 in the morning, I'll tell you more about that. Walking and nature are therapeutic to body and mind. In sum, people on the Camino describe feeling good, mentally and physically. Now, but to what end? What ails many people in Western societies? Mostly stress, a vague sense of anxiety, an impotence in the face of a globalized world that seems to be spiraling out of control. Pressure to do, perceived fears, often distorted, plus overtaxed minds, always on call now in the digital age. Much of our suffering is created in our minds and perpetuated by habits that keep it firmly in place. Remember that pilgrimage is both physical and mental, body and mind working in conjunction. Inner well-being is developed through outer movement of the body and vice versa. My recent research explores how the rise of the internet and development of digital communication devices greatly impacts the mental part of this equation. Digital tech brings mental distraction and dispersion, fragmentation of experiences, connection and engagement with the outside world, an increased perception of needs that require mental attention and focus, and a reduction in long-term, sustained periods of restorative disconnection from mental activity. I call this the Cloud Camino, a brand new mental space created in the 21st century. Ironically, people frequently talk about wanting to have a mental break free of anxiety and desire the peace, clarity, and the mental restoration the Camino offers, but don't see any connection between digital behaviors on pilgrimage and achieving inner and mental well-being. What we're going to do now is take a look at how this plays out on the Camino. Your theater department agreed to help me with this project, and I greatly appreciate their participation. Your classmates are going to perform a series of vignettes set on the Camino, now to explore what happens when you insert digital media tech into the pilgrim experience. The vignettes are broken up with narratives from me and designed to reflect the pilgrimage experience as a rite of passage with three parts. The separation from the known and the familiar, the limen, the journey, the part where you are away and must confront the new and unexpected, and the return, where you have a new status at the journey's end. No matter a pilgrim's motivation, the traveler leaves a familiar homeworld and begins a new identity as an anonymous pilgrim, often outside of his or her or their comfort zone, confronting adversity of different types, including physical and emotional discomfort. Changes in external conditions can be destabilizing and disorienting and help the inner process that leads to insight and reflection. While 21st century pilgrims confront physical adversity more or less the same, blisters, tendonitis, and suffering in the rain and the heat, the major difference is how digital age pilgrims confront the normal mental adversities typical of pilgrimage. 21st century pilgrims tend to want to exercise their physical legs, but not their mental legs, when they let their cell phones solve all of their problems. You know, rites of passage are found all over the world, such as being a college student in American society, like all of you. Going away to college can be seen as an important transition from adolescence to adulthood. You separate from your home and parents in a new environment to challenge ideas, learn skills of self-reliance, and prepare yourself for your professional and emotional future as an adult. Graduation marks the end of this phase. You throw your hat in the air, and then you got a couple of letters to put after your name for your CV. It's a lot like being on a pilgrimage as a potential growth experience, And that process is also significantly impacted by our new digital behaviors that complicate mental separation and individuation. Home now is on campus in ways that it never was in the past, just like it is on pilgrimage. In these performances, we will follow two pilgrims on their journeys in 2019. Keep in mind that roughly 1,200 years, the Camino existed successfully without the presence of digital devices, but by 2019, it is now considered a necessary and normal piece of equipment on most Camino packing lists. There are some people, very few, who choose not to carry an electronic device, and others who develop strategies, a larger percentage, to limit their connectivity, but the trend is to simply carry one's daily life habits with tech into the Camino without much reflection about the potential consequences. Pilgrim One has made a conscious choice to go without a cell phone or digital tech. In his daily life, he's tired of social media, thinks he's too involved with Insta and Facebook, and he wants to get away from it. He wants his Camino to be a true mental break from his life and has told his friends and family that he will be away and not to expect to hear from him. He is a rare bird. Pilgrim Two will take his phone and keep up his normal habits when possible on the Camino without really thinking about it. He also wants a break from his daily life and routines, but it doesn't really cross his mind that using tech media will impact his experience. In fact, Pilgrim Two embraces the idea that digital connectivity will improve his Camino. Safety, convenience, information, booking ahead, contact with friends, family, the world, etc. While these two characters may be exaggerated to help illustrate my observations, all of the situations presented are real and can be found on the Camino. Leaving home. The first vignette relates to the separation phase in our pilgrim's rite of passage. Feeling anxiety before launching oneself into a new and unknown environment is normal. On the Camino, people worry and have pre-Camino doubts about their physical capabilities, packing issues, and what life will be like on the Camino. To counteract the anxiety, people typically prepare physically and mentally to some degree. With the rise of the digital age, the amount of information available to pilgrims has exploded exponentially, allowing pilgrims to engage mentally with the Camino in ways never before contemplated. Importantly, in the 21st century, pilgrims no longer need to contemplate the idea of making a significant mental separation from their home worlds, including their family, friends, work, and online activities. Pre-internet, there was an expected give in between home and the traveler that communication would be broken and limited due to communication tech limitations. There was an enforced letting go on both sides, a true physical and mental break.
Be sure to send a text as soon as you land.
And don't forget to activate your Track My Walk app, okay? I want to follow you every step of the way.
Okay, Mom, I will.
Oh, and yesterday, your blog entry about packing was fantastic.
I mean, packing was tough. Despite all the tutorials I watched and the packing lists I read, I still wasn't sure what to bring. I probably have more than I need.
Yeah, it's really heavy. Aren't you gonna hurt your back?
I don't know. I hope not.
You won't forget my birthday, will you? Give me FaceTime, please.
Of course.
Have you booked your beds ahead, honey? I'd rather there were bed shortages on the Camino. And
jeez, I don't know. You hear so many contradictory things. I booked the first few days. We'll see. Would you mind taking a picture of me? I just want to let all my Camino forum friends know I'm on my way.
Of course. Smile. Okay,
no. Mom. Okay. No. Okay.
Are you ready for this? Will you be okay?
Are you sure you don't want to bring your phone?
Yeah, I'm sure. I've really thought a lot about this, and I just need a break, you know? And I think that my phone would really keep me connected to what's stressing me out. I've thought a lot about this. I'm sure about my decision.
Well, we trust you. Just use your head. You'll be okay.
We're gonna miss you a lot. Have fun.
I'm gonna miss you too.
Digital era pilgrims, despite being the most potentially prepared pilgrims in history, still overplan and overpack. Having access to more information does not necessarily reduce pre-trip anxiety. In fact, it can increase it. In the digital era, the Camino is no longer an unknown space. Pilgrims can now see where they are going before they get there, meet fellow pilgrims, villagers, and pilgrim caretakers online before they physically meet them on the ground, develop a pilgrim identity before starting, and have potentially every question answered by an infinite number of helpful formal pilgrims eager to share their experiences through communal forums, Facebook groups. Pilgrims connect themselves virtually to the police and family through GPS tracking, and people always seem to have a knack for finding something to worry about. If having access to information is supposed to improve our experience, why are we still so worried? Perceived fears often limit people more than real fears. When people feel anxiety before departing, it's more often about confrontation with one's own inner unknown wilderness. How will I react in a new situation? All the potential what ifs can create more anxiety. This is part of the pilgrimage process on the mental level and the beginning of the journey towards inner discovery. It's okay to make mistakes, take too much, not know what to do, face your fears, and try to be brave. In the fumbling and the discarding and the reassessing, that's where people typically learn the value of things and the importance they have for them. People don't realize that in overplanning, you diminish the wonder, discovery, and surprise that potentially await you on a journey of this caliber. One of the great challenges of the digital age is to know when to draw the line when preparing. In the 21st century, pilgrims tend to separate physically, but do not experience the mental rupture. While some people do establish limits, many pilgrims keep the mental channels wide open and are aware of the day-to-day routines, problems, stress, etc., that they left behind physically. Constant maintenance of online relationships and activities keeps the pilgrim mentally distant from the present moment and safely in one's mental routines and comfort zone. It's like you never leave home mentally. Anxiety and worry from home can also get projected onto the pilgrim as well. Pilgrims often enjoy a new mental space and discover they don't want to maintain contact in the same way, yet feel obliged to do so. The old adage, "No news is good news," rarely applies anymore. Our contemporary virtual, often enmeshed relationships appear to have greater fragility that need constant, often public, reinforcement. Part of the power of the separation phase that can be easily lost in the unmanaged digital experience is giving yourself mental and physical space to take stock and to see your life more clearly and where you stand in it. As one woman said to me, "How can people miss you if you're always there?" Being where you are. In the next vignette, our two pilgrims meet on the Camino. Of course, people meet each other all the time, even if tech connected, and value highly the easy social relations possible on the Camino. How does tech engagement distract us, though, from where we are? One of the outcomes of walking through the countryside 6 to 8 hours a day can be an opening of the senses, as well as a changing sense of time, place, space, speed, and being in the world connected to the here and now.
Hola.
Hi.
Oh, are you American?
Yeah. I'm from Virginia. What about you?
I'm from Wisconsin. Tough day today, huh?
Jeez, it's really, really hot. What's that? It kind of looks like a hobbit house. Huh. I'll definitely add that to my blog.
Well, actually, that's a bodega. It's like a cellar that they used to use to keep food cold out on this hot plain. It says it all right here in my guidebook.
Huh. I mean, Hobbit House makes a better story. I cannot wait to get to the next village. My phone says we've got 2 kilometers to go, and then we've gone 25,000 steps. Good for us.
Yeah, well, actually, you could see the next village just over that hill. Look, there's a clock tower. And what we really need, nice cold beer in that village, eh?
Yeah, and Wi-Fi.
The Pilgrim's Day is really very simple. Get up, find the yellow arrows, walk, eat when you are hungry, drink when you are thirsty, and find a place to sleep. People also highly enjoy socializing with others, walking around the villages and towns, and visiting the grand monuments of the Camino's past. Mentally and physically, there's a lot going on, but not the normal stress of everyday life, where the responsibilities of work, family, and daily life can be overwhelming. Consequently, pilgrims often experience a sense of freed-up mental space, like a cork being released from a bottle. When that mental space is opened, pilgrims describe feeling more intensely, remembering their past, dreaming profoundly, and sometimes even experience unforced upwellings of emotion that give access to one's inner world. It can be disconcerting and uncomfortable, but can lead to insight, decision-making, creativity, clarity, and reflection. People frequently describe feeling something they call the here and the now, or the power of the present moment, and value the feeling of being where they are. Digital age pilgrims, to differing degrees, depending on the person and digital management strategies they may employ, tend to complicate this simplicity by adding layers of self-imposed mental obligations and diversions onto their pilgrimage, keeping that cork firmly in place. Tracking biorhythms, doing online work, email, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all forms of social media platforms, online dating sites, sports, stock trading, it's true, TripAdvisor, books, apps of all kinds, games and entertainment, blogs, vlogs, video communications, etc. In addition, many pilgrims operate under an additional cultural layer that reiterates that life is aligned towards a goal that one should rush to, and the more you do, the more likes, the more followers, the more posts, the more kilometers, the more value you have. Our busy, fast-paced lives also tell us that when we stop, we should do something, be busy, fill the space, keep our minds active, otherwise we're wasting time. And it's good to avoid the potential discomfort caused by boredom, loneliness, and doubt. It turns out that wasting time or empty time is actually the opposite. It's potentially very productive, an opportunity to feel, observe, sense the world, and meet other people. The distracted mind needs time to calm down, and it can take days or more than a week for a pilgrim to achieve that feeling of the here and the now. Why do we want to be here on the Camino and someplace else at the same time? In the albergue. We now meet our two pilgrims at the end of the day in a simple pilgrim's accommodation on the Camino called an albergue. Albergues vary greatly on the Camino in terms of size, facilities, services offered, and whether or not you can book ahead to reserve a bed space. In the modern Camino, the albergues are places where pilgrims relate, share experiences, interact, compromise, and often provide some of the most memorable stories of a pilgrim's trip due to the funny situations that can arise due to cultural differences, sleeping habits, and differing expectations. We're going to witness how digital age pilgrims tend to complicate the simplicity of the present moment and the social interactions with their digital needs and habits.
Today was a tough day, but I finally feel my mind starting to calm down. I realize now how busy it normally is. I'm realizing that everything that felt really important back home feels pretty meaningless now. I feel much more present, aware of my surroundings. Like today, I sat down and watched as a bunch of ants carried this giant insect down to their hole. was surprised at how much I could learn just from sitting still. Strength, fortitude, patience, combined effort.
This Wi-Fi really sucks. It's taking forever to upload these photos. I want to go into the village, but I don't know if I'm going to have time with how this is going.
Okay, let's see about where to sleep tomorrow. If we do 25 kilometers, we can stay in Formista. Good. Let's see what's available there. Yeah, pilgrims have given this one bad reviews. Unpleasant owners and bed bugs. Forget that. Oh, here's a 5-star. What an interesting article about a cute dog the owners rescued on the Camino, and he became the albergue's mascot. I'm going to like that and book here. I can't wait to meet the dog. It's already full. What if we don't get a place and have to go to the bedbug albergue? Or worse, sleep outside.
Hey, thank God you're online. I'm so irritated with my mother. I never should have come with her on this stupid pilgrimage. She's ruining it for me.
Why don't you just talk to her?
How can I talk to her? She's totally oblivious. It's easier talking to you. I just need to vent.
But aren't you there to connect and bond?
Yeah, easier said than done. It's so much easier to deal with her from a distance. She gets on my nerves.
Maybe you get on hers, too.
Ugh.
First, I'm going to check the stocks, then the sports, and then I'll finish that Facebook post.
If I have time, then maybe I'll finish that episode of The Walking Dead.
Oh, my God. I kind of feel like a zombie myself.
Oh, my God. My feet hurt. Why am I doing this? I wish there was someone I knew I could talk to. I'll try Margie.
It's Stacy again. I don't want to deal with her right now. She's so needy.
Shoot, she's not picking up.
I was thinking about going down to the village to get some dinner. Would anybody like to come?
Sure, yeah, okay, give me a minute. I'd love to. Maybe in a minute. The photos are almost done uploading and I just need to finish my block.
An evolution in the Camino pilgrimage experience in the digital age was the birth of what I call tech time. After walking and reaching one's accommodation, pilgrims typically engage with their mobile devices to do many different tasks. There is a physical bodily presence on the Camino, but a collective mental migration to the enormous cloud Camino that exists on this mental level in this virtual space above them. Some people do develop strategies to control their tech habits, either while walking or at the end of the day, but progressively more and more people do not. In just a few short years, the tide has shifted so that someone who doesn't carry tech is an oddball, potentially putting himself or herself or theirself at danger, and may be suspected of being a potential phone moocher. This image illustrates the mental state of the digitally connected pilgrim, which you can see in contrast, this bracketed time away in the pre-internet is very different. You can see they're just constant flow. So what does tech time replace if it is a new phenomena? In a world without digital tech needs, pilgrims did not interrupt their mental continuity on a continuous basis. Thoughts, experiences, events were anchored to the present moment. There's a trade-off. If you keep your mind busy doing smartphone activities, that means you're not doing something else that you would have in the past, such as socializing, exploring a village, simply being, reflecting, feeling liberty of mind and body, boredom, inspiration, spiritually lifted or discouraged, missing loved ones, gazing at the stars, learning to value what you don't have and what is important to you, experiencing the power of mental restoration by not having continuous, focused, directed attention on your phone. All of these activities speak to the development of one's inner world, one's inner landscape and Camino. Pilgrimage is now conceived of as a day with specific fragmented segments. Tech time, walking. Tech time, socializing. Tech time, sleeping. And you're constantly parceling out bits and pieces of your inner world to that virtual cloud Camino without processing them in a deep, prolonged way. The power of a prolonged ritual out of time experience is lost as we keep in time with life and the larger world. In our next vignette, our pilgrims are going to experience some adversity. Earlier, I mentioned that in a rite of passage, the individual typically has to get out of his or her or their mental comfort zone and confront challenging life situations for there to be profound inner movement. Resolution of or struggle with the conflict often leads the pilgrim to learn a life lesson, gain self-confidence, resiliency, or perhaps lead to personal insight or stronger bonds with other people involved in that situation. How pilgrims face adversity with and without digital tech mediating their experiences is potentially very different. By the way, the type of adversity you find on the Camino is very manageable and not life-threatening, except in extreme cases. Now, let's watch and see what happens when our pilgrims get lost.
Where are the arrows? Alright, I'm lost. Okay. Now, so she's telling me that way. But who really knows? Let's just check the GPS for sure. Well, it's that way. Man, jeez. Where are the yellow arrows? Am I lost?
Buenos dias. El Camino?
Gracias.
¿Quieres una?
Oh, yeah, gracias. ¿Cómo se llama?
Peppa. Voy a ordenar mis ovejas. Va. ¿Quieres verlo?
Ordenar?
Sí! Vamos!
In the end, getting lost can actually be about finding ourselves. We miss opportunities for growth and connection with others when we resolve them too quickly with our tech. When we outsource our interpersonal and dealing skills to our devices, we atrophy those abilities within ourselves. Media tech can offer us fabulous resources, but they can also progressively erode our confidence in our own abilities when we come to depend and rely on them for resolving basic life situations, where life experience, instinct, reading the natural world, and other human beings may very well suffice. Progressively, we tend to trust technology more than we trust ourselves. Even though the villager has lived here her whole life, or the guidebook indicates the trail goes this way, our digital age pilgrim has to check the tech just in case. And that's not an exaggeration. That kind of thing happens all the time. We often don't allow ourselves to have a pilgrimage by pushing the panic button too quickly. The tendency is to have what I call a TripAdvisor Camino, where we bubble wrap our experiences so nothing goes wrong, without realizing on the Camino that pilgrimage is about living your own journey, not somebody else's. Both mental legs and physical legs atrophy without use. We need stressors to gain strength and confidence. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting lost, because there's always a way of finding yourself back to the main path. Many times what happens to you when you get off course makes for the most significant memories of your Camino. The power of solitude. Our two pilgrims meet again towards the end of the journey near Santiago de Compostela. They've been on the road for about 3 weeks and have mixed feelings about reaching the long-awaited goal. They both have had very positive experiences and aren't sure they want to reach Santiago yet.
Hey, I didn't think I'd see you again. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Really good. Yeah, it's been amazing. I cannot wait to reach Santiago.
Yeah, me too. Well, what's been your most memorable Camino experience?
Well, I mean, there's been so many. The food, the wine, the landscapes, but I guess most of all, though, are just the people I've met from around the world. I mean, we're all just connected on Facebook and Insta now. People are always out there supporting you, giving you likes whenever you post on the former blog. I feel so connected to the Camino community. You know, it's my Camino family.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I've met people on this trip that I'll never forget.
You know, Camino really is just freedom and caring, right? Where can you go and just walk, meet and make friends, meet people who take care of you, and it's cheap. My sister's starting now, too. We're chatting all the time. She's posting and making friends. I really do believe that a lot of us are just experience junkies. I mean, I'm already planning my next Camino for next year, the VDLP. I've met people who've done it 5, 6, 10 times. It's just amazing. What about you?
Well, I've had some very memorable experiences, but I think the most memorable for me was probably actually the first night. It really made me rethink everything that I had chosen to do up until that point. I actually thought I was going to die.
Wow. That sounds dramatic. What happened?
Well, it was my first night. And I was nervous, so I had started late. And before I knew it, I had absolutely no idea where I was. I was completely lost. It was getting dark, and I didn't have a flashlight. All my worst fears were coming true. And finally, I just decided that I would have to wait out the night. So I took out my sleeping bag, and I felt like a terrified child again. I was really, really scared. And as I got into my sleeping bag, I told myself that the next morning I would leave the Camino, never come back. But you want to know something? I got through that night. And when the day dawned, I knew that no matter what, I was going to complete my journey. You know, I had this fear of being alone, you know. But being out on the Camino alone that night really helped me get over that fear. Like, the fear of solitude. It's gone now. And I think that's something that I'm going to take with me when I go home.
You know, had you had a phone, you could have just called emergency services. All right, I'm going to head out.
We live in a world with a fragmentation of social life and meaningful community. People look to slow travel as an antidote for speed and to virtual communities for the antidote to the disappointments of real face-to-face relations. In a world where being alone or unoccupied is frightening or anxiety-provoking, these virtual spaces can fulfill many social, psychological, and spiritual needs. In the digital era, the Camino provides both an on-the-ground real-time community and a 24/7 virtual community that generates an oasis of well-being and belonging in what can seem an unfriendly world. Herein lies one of the paradoxes of pilgrimage in the internet age. If I want to belong, I have to connect and feed the virtual machine to be seen, recognized, listened to, liked, supported. But if I have to connect to the cloud Camino, how can I just be, nourish my inner world, and get out of the connected cycle? It's no longer easy for people to see that these are choices. The desire for belonging may be so great you don't realize that there is any trade-off. We increase virtual connections to the detriment of our on-the-ground, face-to-face engagement with self, others, and nature. It's a great temptation to resolve uncomfortable situations with your smartphone. If you're bored, entertain yourself with music, a podcast, or a book. If you're lonely, call a friend. If you're worried about the next day, book a room. If you want an upper, post a photo on Instagram and wait for the like to come in to get a little shot of dopamine. If you're sad, pour your heart out into your blog for the forum and wait for some virtual feedback to cheer you up. Instead of exploring and struggling with the power of solitude, we are encouraged to quickly resolve supposedly uncomfortable life situations with tech. Self-empowerment, autonomy, inner strength are not tested, honed, built up when you never give yourself a chance to experience discomfort or simply daydream and let your mind wander to remarkable, unexpected inner worlds and connections. Tech usage can have a numbing quality on both positive and negative emotions and keep us from ourselves and the community of those on the ground with us in real time on the Camino. Ironically, these technologies that supposedly free us up are often intentionally designed by the tech engineers to mentally bind us to them, creating dependency. They are not neutral. What appears to free us can become our mental shackles to self-knowledge and growth. As we build invisible walls between ourselves and others every time we look down at the screen or put in our earbuds. Silently creating memories. Now our pilgrims reach the grand Plaza del Obradoiro in front of the cathedral. This is the great gathering place of pilgrims and visitors to Santiago de Compostela. Pilgrims express a large array of mixed emotions upon arrival, triumph and joy and sadness that the journey is coming to an end, and it's often a time of goodbyes to new friends. We're going to see how our two pilgrims experience the arrival in the square in different ways. There's a very strong tendency in the Camino today to capture our experiences with photos and posts versus living experiences in the moment. We live in this tyranny of happiness where we are encouraged to be and show our best faces. In the digital age, our memories seem to lose value when we can't share them. What are the value of our experiences if we don't post them online or receive external affirmation when we do? Do I have to prove I'm having a good Camino to have a good Camino? Do we rely on external affirmation for our inner well-being? If we do, then how does one achieve inner well-being unless you have a device mediating your experiences? We also don't seem to trust our memories or the inner process of taking in life, experiences, and learning through them over time. There's an urgency and need to record and share it, as if by not doing so, it will be lost or forgotten. Maybe details will be lost, but perhaps it's often the essence of an experience that provides the lesson, rather than the focused image. Memory, after all, is not a video recording. How does mediating the experience with a phone, as does Pilgrim 2, potentially impact his creation of a memory of it? He is capturing the moment, half living it, half filming it, neither in one space or the other fully. Will he need to use his phone in the future as a memory aid to help him remember what it was like? Pilgrim 1 is in the here and the now and the moment, living this arrival fully and intensely. He will probably also remember this moment as well intensely because of the way he's taking it in with his senses, focused and present. Our tendency is to outsource our memories to the phone, thereby eroding our memory capacity and engaging in spaces in a more dispersed, distracted manner. Are we progressively developing an ability to stay simultaneously on the surface of our experiences and connected to another reality? Is that progress? If it is progress, in what direction is it taking us? Is it progressively increasing our dependence on digital devices to make sense of our lives, our memories, and the world around us? Am I scaring people away? They're flooding out. The return. The return is the third phase of the pilgrimage as a rite of passage. Now our pilgrims are ready to go home and see their families again. They've said their face-to-face and virtual goodbyes and have gotten on planes to go home. Pilgrim 2 has been in contact with his family the whole time, who has been communicating with him back and forth. Pilgrim 1 has sent a couple of one-way messages to his family to let them know that he was okay. but he hasn't had news about them for about a month.
Oh my God! Hey, we got six landed.
Hey, how are you guys?
We've had so much fun following your blogs and posts. I mean, it looks like it was such a good experience.
Oh my God. I've got it.
You take it from
me. Mom. And yeah, it was. Just the best of my life.
Hey, so you heard about the party we're going to now, right?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, come on now, let's go home. All right.
Well,
I don't feel like myself at all. It's just so much has changed. I got so much to tell you guys about.
Was it everything you expected it would be?
Well, I mean, I don't know about expected, but certainly everything has changed. You know, I've come to realize that, like, all the things that I thought were important here are actually not that important at all. And I made a bunch of huge decisions, too. Let's go home. I'll talk to you a bit on the way.
When the mental proximity is maintained, there is a blurring of the sense of separation in the three stages of pilgrimage. When the mental distance is reduced, the proximity of the return is much closer. Sharing of an experience becomes very different. If you already have created the virtual version of your Camino for your virtual audience, it is not necessary to share or remember the journey in the same way. When the journey is contained within an extended, bracketed period of time away, the return is essential for the unpacking of what has happened. The trend in contemporary pilgrimage is for pilgrims to repeat the journey over and over again, feeling good on the way, sharing their experiences, exploring different caminos, and maintaining virtual connections with a vast network of former and new pilgrims around the world. The traditional concept of pilgrimage as a bounded and bracketed rite of passage, as described previously, is nearing its end, as we unreflectively incorporate new technologies into our experience without pausing to reflect on the potential consequences on a profound inner journey such as a pilgrimage. We are in the midst of a data flow tsunami, and the Camino can be an island of calm. People are often at sea in this tsunami, but they don't want to admit it or recognize it. My goal has been to draw your attention to a reality that is more and more normal, and to remind and show you that you do have choices to imagine other realities, to shape your own future, and not just be a passenger in the experience. We can create spaces for ourselves and places of mental calm and well-being. One of the most valuable gifts your liberal arts education can give you is to develop critical thinking skills. Never stop questioning why things are the way they are. Even if the macro situation is beyond your control, you can influence and make choices about your micro situation. What do you want on your pilgrimage of life? Do you want to be the driver or the passenger? And in this image, do you want your smartphone to sit in the driver's seat? Or do you want to sit there with your phone accompanying you and empowering you? Do you want to serve it or have it serve you? If you do decide to go on pilgrimage, how can you manage your tech usage to enhance your journey towards inner growth or the development of inner resiliency and exercise your real and mental legs? What strategies can you employ to manage your devices that allow you to be present fully on your Camino and to attend to your lived reality in the 21st century? These are not easy questions to answer, and each person will have different responses. I believe, though, that they are worth reflecting on. Sometimes life asks us to be brave. As pilgrims say to one another on the way,
Buen camino!
I would like to thank Elizabeth Wiley, Professor Elizabeth Wiley, and her fabulous class of performance and presence for their magnificent performance tonight and making this play come alive. You did a great job. Thank you. Oh, and Professor Wiley's right down here. You didn't see her. We are now going to do a question and answer. And I think we're doing it. Ben, do you want to say something?
Sure, we're doing it live. So raise your hands and we'll come to you with a mic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you for your talk.
I'm sorry, I can't see you. Thank you.
So our first Call 300 speaker, Bakir, mentioned, he made a distinction between move and migration, saying that movement is sort of passive relocation from one place to another, while migration is that coupled with consciousness. How does that, do you make a distinction between movement and migration, and how does that fit into the pilgrimage and the Camino?
Well, this, I mean, ooh, sorry. The pilgrimage to Santiago is a huge different from different types of migration. It's a voluntary movement. This type of pilgrimage that people are going on generally are people who have, it's an option for them. Sometimes there are many migrations in the world that have to do with people who have life circumstances. They're in some of the albergues, I saw this, you know, peregrinos forzados, peregrinos voluntarios. These are voluntary pilgrims generally on this pilgrimage to Santiago versus a forced pilgrim, perhaps someone who's on a migration that they have to go somewhere. And so here in this, when I'm talking about like a mental migration, it is in a sense this movement towards off into this space, up into this mental world. And it's not like a physical movement. You don't really even know where they go. It's maybe not even a migration. It's just mental space up in this cloud taking people all over in different places. Is that kind of where you answer your question? Any other questions?
Hi. So Hi. As the Camino becomes more and more popular, yeah. Does it become more and more commercialized? And I guess, how does the Camino stay or maintain its tranquility with a higher volume of participants?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, one of the things that I always try to emphasize is that the Camino has always been in flux and change over its 2,000 year history. 1200 year history. It's always been moving and changing, and it is changing now rapidly. So in terms of commercialization, there's been concern about commercialization. That term has come up since the 1990s. People were worried about it in the 90s, the commercialization. So as the Camino has grown, it has, and its popularity, there has been a greater commercialization because there has been a demand for more pilgrim services. So there's been changes in a lot of villages, and there's also been initially, like when I did my research, the main Camino that people followed was one called the Camino Francés, which is from running across northern Spain, about 800 kilometers. If any of you saw the movie The Way, this is the one that people were traveling on. One of the parts of with so many people going is that there has been a resurgence of many of the other Caminos to alleviate the flow from the Camino Francés. So there has been the Portuguese way, for example, that comes from the south and goes north, the English way, the northern way. So this has spread people out. So how do you find tranquility? There are also certain places, times of year, that are considered to be more busy than others. But there's always a possibility of finding peace and quiet. Like many of those photos that you saw were taken in 2018, 2019. It's easy to find, depending on where you are, that peace of mind.
Hi, so you actually answered my initial question that does this happen year round or is there a specific season? So if this does happen year round, what are some different experiences things that you've realized there are different experiences from doing this year round, or are they all usually the same?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it has a little bit to do with the other question. Sometimes people choose different times of year because they want to avoid crowds or they only have availability. But yes, there are people who are on the Camino 365 days a year. And one of the emerging nationalities, they catalog and they look at, there's about 155 or more nationalities that are on the Camino now. And for example, the Koreans, in the year 2004, there were 18 Koreans. And by now, 2017, 2018, they're the ninth nationality. And in January and February, they actually represent 45% of pilgrims. Why is that? That's because that's when they have their vacation time. So you can have all these winter pilgrims, and winter pilgrims, depending on which Camino you can do, can be very difficult. You can run into snow and very difficult conditions. And a lot of people like to avoid the summer heat. So there are certain times of the year that have been more popular, April, May, the fall. But then, based on availability, the character of the Caminos can change. Like, for example, in Europe, people have vacation in July, August, students, young people. So there can be a lot of different fluctuations during the year based on many different factors.
So there is a branch of the Camino that goes through Catalonia. I was just wondering, with the secessionist movement, if you knew if that was going to have any effect on that part of the Camino at all.
No, I don't think that will have any impact whatsoever. That was probably the shortest answer you'll ever get from me on any topic.
I was just wondering, in your mind, what are some positive uses of technology? How can it supplement the Camino without detracting from it?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, how, because I understand, you know, one of the questions people ask me is, do you have a smartphone? Do you use cell phone? You know, and yes, of course, I am in the 21st century, and I have my own device. The thing is, I think it's really important, depending on what your particular goals are for your journey, if you want to have a deep reflective experience, if you're thinking about that as part of what you would like to get out of your Camino, then I would encourage you to think about how those digital habits can influence your experience. So, for example, let's just say your question was, how can it benefit? So, I mean, if you do, some people do want to have what they call a collaborative pilgrimage, where they want to, maybe they go from a parish and they are going to go and walk the Camino, and maybe people from their parish can't go with them, but they are going to write a blog and those people back home can follow in their journey with them. And they feel connected with that pilgrim's journey, and that can be a very positive community usage, for example, of the technology. So, I mean, there's different ways. I've had, though, some people who didn't, they thought that they want to be connected, for example, and then when they got on the Camino, all of a sudden they found themselves in this different mental state, and they didn't feel like sitting down and writing their blog anymore. They didn't feel like reporting back to other people. And then it was like, oh God, what do I do? Now they're worried. And you know, so it's something to reflect on. I encourage you to reflect on beforehand. How can I manage it? And so that's one of my articles, is 15 suggestions of how you can reflect before you go to, you know, make it compatible with you. I mean, it can be just something simple like turning off your notifications. You know, something, putting it on airplane mode. Trying to, let's say when I sit down in this bar, in this cafe, I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm just going to see how I feel. As an experiment, a self-experiment. What would happen if I just allowed myself to sit here and not pull out my phone? And in that stillness, in that moment, maybe you'll meet somebody. Maybe you'll observe something interesting. So it's just a little bit of self-experimentation. I'm not saying do a digital detox or go cold turkey, or there's little things that you can do that can change your experience.
I was wondering, as you said this, like, is the dichotomy kind of between people, the experiences of people who use technology and those who don't, is that something you've observed in others, or have you experienced it yourself? Like, this is probably a really dumb question, but have you ever brought your phone or technology on the Camino?
Well, I'm not really a good example, because I have a business, and I'm taking people, I walk with them on a journey. So I need to be communicating for the logistics of this journey. So in my case, and where have these observations come from, is that I have been continuously on this pilgrimage walk for 27 years. So I have literally witnessed it, you know, straddling two sides from the 1993 all the way through 2019, and I have witnessed the slow incorporation of, from it being something where people were going around looking and trying to find cyber cafes. And that actually was a way that people discovered towns and villages. They would have to go wandering around, and it was like an exploratory mission. Where's the cyber cafe? Do you even know what a cyber cafe is? You don't even know what a cyber cafe is. Well, when people didn't have smartphones and they didn't have computers, there was something called a cyber cafe. There used to be telephones. You know how there used to be telephones on streets? You've seen that in movies? Yeah. Well, when those got eliminated, then they put in computers. And so people could go into and find one of these buildings, this cyber cafe, and go do this. And this became like an exploratory way to go see the village, or they'd go discover the library because they were looking for ways to connect. And then you saw people bringing their laptops, which were not as compact as they are, and people do still carry laptops. So yes, I do. But if it doesn't matter. I mean, each person. It's not a question of what is right or what is wrong. It's you trying to find a path that can help you grow, and not, you know, these can be access points to your inner world, and this is what I would like it for people to be able to reflect on. How do you want your own experience to be enriched?
Hi, I just want to say, first of all, that I loved your speech. My questions are, one, how long does it typically take to make this journey? And two, what is the most dramatic transformation that you have seen?
Well, this is one of the things that I love about the Camino, is that there is no set Camino. It's a journey, just like life is a journey. There are many different Caminos, and people decide, you know, in the old days, you just walked out your front door because you walked to Santiago. You didn't have a gathering point. You'll hear people talking about, oh, I did the whole Camino. And in the revival of the 1990s, the whole Camino got fixed as this idea from the Pyrenees, the Spanish-French border, to Compostela. But that is just a very modern construct. So the Camino can be as long or as short on any of these pathways that you want. So if you wanted me to give you the answer of what is the whole Camino, the whole Camino that people do is about 780 kilometers, which is about 450 miles. But you can also do many other Caminos that have many different lengths and starting points, just depending on your time that you want to give to this experience. Oh, and the second question, the most profound transformation? Several people actually who were walking along, and they felt profoundly moved by the sense of gratitude or the giving nature. Many times people feel a sense of gratitude for the gifts that they receive, maybe not directly from one person, but many different experiences along the way. And it creates this wonderful generativity. This is what I say, it's like collective good. It's a very healthy social response to people's problems. And sometimes there have been some stories where people have been so moved that they have just dropped their lives back home and they decided that they wanted to come back and be a pilgrim caretaker. And I know several stories, and I think that's pretty profound.
Question?
How do you see the role of privilege in determining who has access to the Camino, and how do differing levels of privilege interact with technology use during the pilgrimage?
Well, the people you see on the Camino generally are coming from a place of privilege. Most of them have access. This is a voluntary activity that they're doing. They are people who have free time. You see lots of young people and older people, people in different states. But you don't see, you do see all these different nationalities, but these are also people who have resources, funds, money, free time, vacation, and they're able to come to this experience. So privilege is really quite important to have access. There are a number of people, though. I mean, I've run into them, but who are doing it perhaps more for religious reasons, that maybe they're more local European who are going, who maybe not as privileged, and for them it's very much a powerful religious experience. But I would say the rank and file are people who have access to resources. And technology, everybody who goes, 90, 95, 97% of the people have phones. Or they've chosen not to, and those people would have them if they wanted them. So, people who have phones, privileged.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you all.